Hello, and we're live. Welcome to the Permaculture Vine podcast, monthly podcast with Permaculture Canada and our special guest, Jamin. Welcome, guys.
Hey.
Hello. Good to be here.
Howdy.
So, introductions. I'm Cormac, founder of Vine Permaculture and Edible Installs. Lindsay, do you want to introduce yourself quickly?
Yeah, my name is Lindsay Brandon, and I'm the CEO and owner of Permaculture Canada and Armagarden.
Graham.
I am Graham Towerton, the one who Lindsay picks on as her chief operations officer in Permaculture Canada. Glad to be here, Cormac.
Jamin.
I'm Jamin Mishlevich, the co-founder of TIAG, the Independent American Gardener Program, and Haven Permaculture LLC. Happy to be here.
You're all very welcome, guys, again, for our monthly meeting. So what have you all been up to? I've had a good month. Loads of energy. I've relaunched the Edible Installs, which is my local design company. So I done that on Saturday, and I got a site visit then on Tuesday to a really really sort of cool passive house. So it's made from completely recyclable materials, so aluminium, wood, the insulation, everything, so it's completely environmental friendly. And then they're looking for a garden. They sort of set the house off. So a big challenge for me. But I did the site visit. I was there for 2 hours on Tuesday. So news of that, they come. I've been tidying up my own garden. Finally got the weather. So in Ireland, the Celtic spring is the 1st of February. So it's officially spring here. So that brought a lot of positivity, a lot of new energy. So I'm raring to go for the year. That's been my month. Lindsay, what have you been up to?
Disappearing into a cabin in the woods. And that was great. It was Groundhog Day here in Canada. That's what we have. And I hit a wicked winter storm, and it was perfect. I went out and saw my friend's land. They have 10 acres in the hills of Creston, BC, with a beautiful stream running through it. And they actually got a water license. They were able to modify the stream a little bit so that they can capture that waterfall and bring it into their property. It's beautiful. They're going to put up some domes there and a tiny house where somebody can live and stay on site and maintain some B&B rentals. But it's going to be more of a kind of like a spiritual break for people, where they encourage you to just kind of like go there, be by yourself, have some like super peace in the woods. So that's what I was up to like for the whole month. What was I up to? I'm really doing a lot of techie stuff because we're looking at redoing our website. Also starting my own podcast that's a little bit more refined than my last one. So there's a lot to learn. So I'm super stoked to connect with you, Cormac, on a monthly basis, because you're definitely going to be mentoring me in that process. As far as process flows, there's so much that you do for preparing for this podcast, and you're doing an outstanding job. So thank you for that. Other things that I'm doing, editing videos from all the site visits that I was doing over the past year. I have a lot of catch up to do in terms of showcasing all those partners of ours. So I'm doing that and focusing on indoor growing. So I'm sure you've all heard about the tariffs from the US on Canadians. So we're coming up with some solutions up here, and there's a big focus on indoor grow right now. So vertical farming, we're looking at tower gardens. We're looking at all sorts of different, we have some partners with us already. So we're looking at those alternative options for us as far as getting greens in Canada when it's minus 30 outside. It's a little bit about what I'm up to.
Very cool.
All right, Graham, you're muted there.
Thanks, Cormac. Yeah, for me, Julia and I recently made a permaculture presentation at our local nursery here in town in Adrian, which went really well. We had probably 20-some people show up on a Saturday morning. Gave the presentation. We've had a few people then sign up for the newsletter and for free consultations. So that's been a great event. No sooner had I posted that I was going to be presenting at that location at Barrett's Nursery here in town, one of the friends of my oldest daughter, who works in the greenhouse nursery close to us, said, hey, when can you come and be at our place? So I'll probably have a couple more presentations to make locally at the greenhouse nurseries here in my area. So that's going to lead to, you know, obviously some new opportunities to meet some more people, get myself intertwined with the local nurseries so that I can get more plants. I managed to get a 10% business discount for buying plants from Barrett's Nursery as a result of the partnership with them here locally. Lindsay completed a design for one of my local customers, and we had a great chat with her. And so my next activity with Cindy is to start working on her quote for the install here in spring. I've got several other customers who are already hitting me up to say, when can I start doing work? I'm like, yeah, let's let the ground be a little bit less frozen. So I'll be starting on quotes next for all of the spring planting activities with all of my existing local customers. And then because the weather has been so cold, we've been doing a lot more indoor project work. So I got the heater working in my barn. I got the flue pipe all sealed up so it doesn't smoke out my barn when I start burning some wood in there. Makes it a little bit more comfortable to work in that place. And then right through the door to my right is the stairway to my attic. And it's been an unlined and uninsulated space for most of the time that we've been here. So we've been working on putting the insulation in and putting up some tongue and groove pine for the ceiling and turning that into a future sound and yoga studio and library. So that's me for the month.
Keeping busy. Somebody put all them books in.
Yeah, exactly.
Jamin, sorry, oh, go ahead there.
Shout out to some people that are joining us. We got Sean Stanton that joined us. He was hosted on the show last month, and he had a great launch. So hello, Sean. Thanks for joining us. We got True North Naturals. So we also have a Chaga farmer out there in Ontario listening in, and we have Tag and B from down in Kansas. Thanks for joining us.
Awesome. And I've got a shout out to Lisa Stromfer in Manitoba. That's a long way from where I'm at, and a place where we did a nice homestead design for Lisa's property. Welcome, Lisa.
Welcome, everyone. Jamin, what are you up to?
Very cool. Well, first of all, this is awesome. Just kind of see how you guys are well-rounded and doing this monthly, I guess, for a little while now. Super cool to see how you all have been functioning and the things you've been up to. For us, it's been a little bit chaotic, actually. Coming out of the holidays, we were totally inundated with backlog designs still. We've been working really hard to try to crank all of that out. And so we put a whole shift of focus into from doing everything ourselves and a little bit more into the delegation and trying to create more of a network and a team. I am guilty of taking everything upon myself and then just, you know, DIYing my way through things and not so good at delegating. So that's been a skill I've had to learn. But we've been focusing a lot on the shop. I don't know if I've explained too much about the hub project we have in Trenton, Missouri. It's like a 20,000 square foot building down there on Main Street. And the vision for it is to create a permaculture demonstration site that resembles everything that you could imagine permaculture incorporating in a regular homestead or a regular urban setting from a commercial perspective. And we want to really show people how to do it right there on Main. And so we've been doing a lot of the designing of that property. We got some good 3D renderings, creating some pitches for the local city municipalities to kind of get things approved and moved forward. Been working a lot on trying to budget it out because there's a lot of contractors that got to get involved to do things like rain catch on a city street. A lot of other elements of that building too went probably 20 years without anybody doing anything to it. And so a lot of it is cleanup. So for the last month, that's been my core focus, is just trying to clean that space up. And then balancing that between the catch-up work from 2024's designs and the prep work for 2025's plans. And so my family's been kind of all over the place. Tyag, on a business perspective, is shifting quite a bit into focusing on getting the community moved over to a new platform. And we're wrangling in a whole bunch of support for that project. We hope to launch the new platform in April, and which is the same time we'll be actually out in in Iowa, where I'll be speaking and shaking hands with Joel Salatin. So that'll be a lot of fun out there. And we're hoping to make that the official launch of the new community as well, simultaneously to that. And hopefully also support you as a new collaborator in that platform too. So there's a lot of moving pieces for us, but most of it has been balanced between the computer work and the restoration of that hub.
Keeping busy. Well, we'll get back to the TIAG, the new community at the end of the show. If people want to hear more about that, make sure you wait to the end. It's exciting stuff. I'm a collaborator in there, and I'm not sure whether it's definitely had an effect already, because we had 600 listens on the podcast this week, which is our best ever yet. And then thanks to you three, you have been on the podcast several times, all of you. So all the guests as well, especially you three, thanks very much. It's definitely going the right direction and getting more people. So I think a combination of being on the new platform, having new audiences, sharing it with Permaculture Canada and Sean's platform and the collaboration, I think that's it's good to see it's helping everybody. So it's, I think it's definitely a way to go. And then we have all our own separate projects as well, which is good. So Lindsay, you mentioned tariffs here. So it's a very topical thing at the minute. Now I don't want to get into the politics of it, but what I would like to get to is get into the solutions of it. So if anybody's watching the news now and freaking out, going Tara and all this and Trump wielding the axe and stuff, how are you preparing for that? We'd like to give us more details on that, and then sort of advice for people who are worried about it. Really, how can they sort of sort their own homestead out? Which I think the four of us have been doing anyway.
Yes. There's I really tend to stay out of politics too myself. You know, I'm not a big advocate of watching the news and things like that. So I like to surround myself with all these solutions. And that's exactly what I see, right? Is every time something like this comes up, you know, we've had water pipes burst in Calgary that we've had horrible things happen as a result of it, but there's also always something really great that comes of this, right? Then people learned how to do rainwater capture on a massive scale in our municipality, right? All of a sudden, everybody's listening to it. So with this sort of tariff situation, everybody's getting really together and saying, you know, let's support each other, let's buy local, all these things are popping up on the internet where it's like buy Alberta, buy Canada, buy BC. So people are really just creating these hubs, and all of a sudden there's an influx in being aware of who is the business closest to you doing this, right? And it's all categorized. And I think a lot of this sort of stuff came about through COVID, where it started being like that, where people just wanted to, you know, start supporting each other's businesses in a closer bioregional setting. So I'd say this is that on steroids. Because it's happening very quickly. I think it's really exciting. I think it's really great. You know, like, yes, let's diminish how much we're spending on shipping. Let's not fly our food in from super far away. This is a permaculture principle to be more bioregional. So I think it's serving humanity at the same time. You know, like, things can look really nasty, yes, but it also takes that frustration and anger to create change, substantial change, to create those brainwaves, to create new solutions. So that's what I'm seeing of all this. And I love it. Like, I love that we need more indoor growing in Canada. We need more year-round growing solutions. So now we have a whole bunch of people thinking about this. So it's great. If I want to focus on those positive aspects, that's where it's at.
Can I chime into that? I think you kind of hit that on the head. You mentioned just for a minute of not importing things and focusing really, really intuitively on the local surplus of all this. I don't like to get into the politics of stuff either, but I think it is a really cool opportunity to just point out how pivotal and significant it is to be able to know your community and to know where your resources are and who you can call for different needs and use cases. You know, as a business owner, we're always like, hey, who do I know that can help me with this thing and that thing? And we're making connections and phone calls and your texts and all this stuff. But it can be you can be totally lost in cyberspace trying to manage all of those things. And you forget, you actually got to eat at the end of the day. And I think tariffs and general political movement in at all is a really good reminder of how important it is that we're focusing on food, water, shelter, and surplus in our own backyards and in our community, and using it as a, like you said, channeling all that emotion into something that we can create that's positive and beautiful. And I think COVID actually gave us a good example of how to do that, because it kind of shook the foundations of everybody's surplus distribution, and we were all able to kind of take another look at the way that we get what we need.
Graham, have you any thoughts, Ned?
Yeah, the tariffs, it was funny to start with when I saw it happen. I told Lindsay, I said, yeah, this is just a ploy to try to get Canada to become the 51st state of the US. And in any event, you know, the first impact that I actually saw was just the change in the exchange rate. There was an impact on the stock market. The exchange rate with Mexico and with Canada changed pretty quickly, but you know, the whole situation resolved itself pretty quickly. I think everybody decided to play game with each other instead of actually implementing the tariffs. So I think right now there's actually a freeze on the tariffs for 30 days with both countries. But all of that aside, you know, the solutions are that, you know, we need to work together, you know, just to work out how, without boundaries, you know, like this imaginary line that exists between Canada and the United States and Mexico and the United States, how can we all work together to improve what we do with permaculture and help people to grow their own food, regardless of whether it's tariffs or whether it's events like the past pandemic or other natural disasters that have taken place. You know, permaculture is a solution to helping people have more food when they need it, regardless of what the circumstances are that create the shortage. Another great example here right now is we've got avian flu going through all of the bird flocks, and, you know, lots of culling of the flocks in the commercial factories. And I call them factories because they're egg factories. They're not farms. In any event, I was almost oblivious to what was going on because we have our own chickens, and I'm starting to have people contact me and saying, hey, you got eggs ready available for this season? And I haven't yet quite, but people are paying $7, $8, $10 a dozen for eggs, and I was selling online last year for $4. I don't have the urge to put my price up at all, but, you know, there's an immediate need for folks to have eggs. And I think, you know, that's the type of thing, again, where we can help people create resilience and, you know, avoid the risk of inflation for folks just by providing them with solutions where they can grow these things in their backyard, whether it's eggs, whether it's, you know, fruit and vegetables.
So you mentioned as a solution there that we're doing indoor growing. I've started seeds indoors with lights, but it wasn't really practical in the kitchen. So have any reasons I've got an indoor grow setup that would be practical? Now, I have a garage with shelter, but when I do stuff out there, it tends to get very moldy. So I tend to avoid it. What type of indoor growing setups have you got, or any advice on that?
Yeah, mine's a little bit way off. When we start seeds this early, and somebody put it in one of these social media things too, they're like, start the seeds. It's like, if you start your seeds now, they're going to be like a hair and then they're going to dry out and die. So like, we don't really need to start our seeds just yet, but people are definitely getting really excited already. You know, like once we have a Chinook here, which is like a warm wind that comes through the mountains and warms us up, people are going to hit the garden stores. There's a tendency to start things pretty early. So just to get excited, all the garden stores are actually starting to fill up with their supplies. So it makes it exciting. It feels like spring might be right around the corner. And then we get minus 30 like this. So we're still a little bit off as far as seed starts go. You can start some in March and some in April. Tend to want to space them out or even double up in our case. You know, like start some in March, maybe they'll make it. Start some in April in case the ones in March didn't, sort of thing. That's kind of the approach that I take.
I'm more of the put it in the pot and get as many as you can out there and then see what makes it, because you got more things to do. You can't really watch it. They end up growing more than you can manage in a small space, and then hope you have a good output by the end of the season. We've been in the camper for a while, so our kitchen gardening is a little bit erratic right now.
Yeah, so on the indoor growing, I've actually started the process of getting mine set up. I've got two small aeroponics kits that I purchased on Amazon because I just wanted to test them out. And then a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, I went down to Indiana for a visit to our partner, keepitwater.com, Steve Kuntz, and obtained from him a harvest wall. Which I brought back. It needs a little bit of repair work, but it's got 360 grow slots in it. So that's going to be down in my basement here probably within the next 3 or 4 weeks. It's still a little bit early for me as well to be planting stuff indoors for transplanting outdoors later. I could do onions right now. That's probably about it for our zone that could go in the ground in time once they grow out in the basement. But I'm going to wait a little while longer. I want to use the harvest wall and the other systems for growing out some seedlings that I can then transplant out into the garden as soon as my last frost is finished. I want to put some plants out that can handle the frost, you know, some of the brassicas, maybe some lettuce. I've got some outdoor raised bed gardens that I've got some covers over, and some, you know, some I've turned into cold frames with glass covers on top. So my indoor growing activities are right now just limited to all the plants I've got indoors overwintering, like my citrus and olives and those kinds of things in my basement under the grow lights. Thrilled that both of those, the citrus and the olives, are all putting out new green leaves already, which is great to see. But in any event, yeah, I'll be probably seeding those aeroponic systems probably in March so I can transplant stuff out in early to late May.
Very cool.
Great stuff. So I'll be planting some seeds this weekend. I think we are due for frost, but I'll be set up basically the front of my house is south-facing, and I'm going to put together a redneck, colchy friggin' cold frame. Just maybe some plastic, put it out the front, and if I need to move the stuff inside, then I can under the heat mats, just to get something started, because I'm itching to go. So I think at this time of year, we can plant onions. Some people start their tomatoes this time of year already. Some people started them here in January. So it's onions and tomatoes, and I mean some lettuce, just to try and get some greens in, get on the salads early. So I'll be documenting that, so we'll see how that turns out. But like every weekend I have, I plan to do stuff, and I plan that much stuff that I only get half of it done. But we'll see how it goes. So what's planting-wise, I suppose, for February? What else should people be looking at now at this time of year? Anybody want to chime in there?
Yes. So for me, the where we're at in the continental here, we're actually right in the center of the heartland up in northern Missouri. And the topic as of the last week has been pruning, getting out there, getting your fruit trees pruned and getting them prepped and ready for a good bud break in March. Out here where I'm at, we usually have the bud break roughly the first week to third week, sometime inside there in March. But then we always get that last cold influx, and it can freeze the trunk of the trees and cause everything above that trunk to die off. And so when we're pruning, we're usually trying to also include some kind of extra protection for that final break when the bud breaks and then the final frost comes back through and freezes all that water that's now moving through the trunk. And so that's something to pay attention to, any lingering cold weather that might surprise us, as of the last few weeks have been especially strange and doesn't look like that's going away anytime soon, but definitely pruning season.
Yeah, that's actually just reminded me of a couple things, Jamin, that you tipped me off on there. For anybody who's a maple syrup person that wants to tap their trees, that's a good thing to watch, you know, as the trunks, as the snow melts around the trunk, right? That's when you can start to know that that flux is going inside the tree trunk, where it's a good time to tap your trees. Just a little tip there. And same thing over here when I was out in the mountains over the weekend, the orchards, there's snow everywhere, and it's got to be so beautiful to be out there just pruning all the orchards, right? So you can see all the branches and the rows, and that was kind of utopic. I wished I was living the orchard life while I was there, and I kind of was, just observing it. Great. For next up.
One of the cool things about that, when you're pruning and you're going through the orchard like that, is to see everything else wake up around the orchard, kind of like little indicators from nature that spring's really here. Like we get redbud where I'm at, and it's a beautiful tree. It comes out like a pinkish purple red, really beautiful. And when it starts to wake up, you know everything else is really finally moving and you're really setting into the season. So it's super cool to watch.
Yeah. And with those changes, we've had a number of things happen, especially in BC. BC Fruit is one of our biggest producers. They shut down last year. A lot of the stone fruit is really suffering the past couple of years, because what's happening is we're getting really warm really early in the year. The trees are budding and then they get a frost and they kill. So that happened last year. It's happened again this year in some areas, not everywhere. It's really changing the dynamic of orchard farming up here. People are actually annihilating fields of trees because they're just giving up altogether. Mm-hmm. So it's a pretty interesting thing to be navigating, you know, what is going to be the best solution in terms of, well, what are we going to plant in the place of what everybody's taking down? How are we going to put more resiliency into these orchards, right, with more biodiversity instead of monocrop orchard situations? So again, the problem is the solution there. Looked like Graham wanted to say something on that too.
Yeah, I mean, I've experienced the same thing and, you know, had numerous conversations with people, not just here in the Midwest, but across the broader parts of North America, that have had the same experience. You know, further south, here in my location in Michigan, we had 2 years in a row where we haven't had any fruit on our stone fruit trees, our pears, apples, etc. Last year specifically, we had 70 degree weather almost at this time here in February for a week, which caused everything to wake up. So I'm really hopeful this year that we'll have a colder February and keep everything dormant. But last year, most of my stuff had budded out and bloomed out in March. And then we had these heavy freezes in April, which literally killed everything. Mm-hmm. So the only crops that I actually was successful with last year were my berry crops. For whatever reason, they did really, really well. So my blueberries, my blackberries, my raspberries, and my strawberries all did great. So I'll probably put more of those in. And I think the focus that I'm going to take is just now looking at different varieties for all of those different trees that I've mentioned, and looking at, you know, how much chill hours that they need, and seeing maybe if I put in some other varieties that need fewer chill hours, that, you know, then maybe they're going to survive better. But I think also then just trying to see what I can do to get varieties which are better adapted for my climate to start with, you know, for the next round of trees that I put in. Trying to buy more from regional nurseries. In the past, you know, I've been guilty of buying from all of the online sellers of plants, and most of those nurseries have all been based in places like Georgia and Texas and Florida. And so when those plants get migrated up to my place, you know, I'm not sure that they're really well adapted for this area, and I don't know if they can adapt for this area even if they've been in the ground for a long period of time. So my focus now is to see if I can get more stuff from my local nurseries that are within 100 to 200 miles, and, you know, specifically ask them if they've been growing their plants. So a little bit of a shout out for my friend Doug Crouch down in Kentucky, just across the Ohio border. He's been a supplier for me now for the last year. I've taken two or three different loads of plant stock from his place to build my own permaculture nursery and to add to my farm. And he does a great job of growing all of his own plants from scratch, doing his own grafting, using compost for everything. So, you know, finding a nursery like that is a godsend for me. And, you know, I encourage everybody to see what they can find within, you know, 50 to 100 miles of their place that, you know, uses those types of practices for growing all their stock.
And that can be a good USP as well, Graham, can't it, for people who are practicing and people who have land. They actually advertise that you're growing plants that are relevant to your area. I think Scott Muller does that, Thrive in the Future. Was it grownuttrees.com? That's how he specializes in chestnut trees and nut trees for the Midwest area. And that's what he advertises as a unique selling point. So instead of people going to the big stores, they'll pick you. Just something to highlight.
Yeah, I think it's important too to look at your genetic succession. When you're planting something in the ground, you mentioned that you may not know if it can adapt to the area. But if you let it have some offspring and go through the series of genetic successions, eventually you'll be able to cultivate something that's at least a little bit hardier to that area. And you know, some species you'll fight, and eventually nature's just going to say, look, you need to knock it off. This
Absolutely. Yeah, and that's a good approach, and that's worked with my two favorite peach trees. They were actually given to me by one of my work colleagues when I first moved up here and was working in a biodiesel plant, and they were seedlings that had come up from the peach pits underneath his trees. He gave them to me as like 12-inch tall seedlings, and I planted them. They're now 12, 13 feet tall. And every year I have this problem of beating the squirrels to the peaches, and invariably they'll put the pits in the ground around the bottom of the trees. And every year for the last couple, 3 years, I've been getting 20 to 30 new seedlings coming up.
Yeah.
So I've taken 15 or 20 of those out to my new field to the east and planted them. And, you know, they're in their second year in the field now. And so hopefully 5 or 6 years from now, they start producing peaches. And then I can go through that third generation.
I love that. There's an aspect of the letting the nature, or letting squirrels specifically do the work for you in nature. When we started our vision for Taya communities, we actually began it in a small urban backyard, back to Eden style garden. And we didn't have a whole lot of fruit trees. We eventually planted like 27 fruit trees on that property, but the squirrels were taking the acorns and planting oak trees in my wood chips, and they were planting them everywhere. And, you know, you could look at that like a nuisance and saying, oh, they're planting all these pits and these acorns. Or you can kind of look at your backyard like it's like nature wants it to be a nursery, right? It's a production. You have a surplus now. And so we looked at all those acorns and we said, well, actually now we have a bunch of oak saplings. And so now it becomes a surplus production from our property. And we have a completely free labor force. So it was pretty cool to see that nature take over and do that for us.
Yeah, and that reminds me of, I got two organizations that I met over the past month, one of them being Forest Canada. They are supplying trees, like funding for trees for people to plant them. We have the 2 billion tree program up here in Canada. So I want people to encourage to look into those sorts of things in your bioregional areas. If there's any sort of funding for tree planting, do that. And then another organization I met is Friends of Fish Creek Society, Alberta Native Plant Rescue. So what these people do is, when there's a development going on in town, you can volunteer to go dig up the native plants and take them home. And they're looking for people with land, you know, where you can put them, which I have lots of access to lots of different land, but what an opportunity to have a native plant nursery. So I also encourage people to kind of look into their areas, because this is probably a new and up and coming thing, or a potential for somebody to start doing a business like this in your area, because as we know, developments are happening all the time. It's just the people power to get people out there and digging them up. But yeah, let's network and save the native species.
Great stuff. So we'll get their special guest this month, which is Jamin. And Jamin's here to talk about TIAG, amongst other things. So I am a contributor to TIAG. So I'm in there. So we'll be doing special shows with a podcast. But I'll let Jamin take it from here. Jamin, do you want to tell everybody about TIAG and what's it about and how people can get involved?
Sure. Yeah. So TIAG originally started off as an initiative. We were basically just putting out a call to action to say, hey, we all need to do something about this, right? If you want to be the change you want to see in the world. And we founded it with the concepts of family self-sufficiency. So if you look at family self-reliance, you can't really achieve 100% self-reliance on a property. But what you can do is achieve 100% self-sufficiency. You can get to the point where there's at least sufficient for your needs within the bounds of a property. But in order to really not plateau and degrade and find yourself in another downward trajectory, you need that community. This is where the barter and trade aspects come in. This is where you get surplus you can't get in an urban property. You can get in a rural property. A little bit more focus on some of the urban aspects of this don't necessarily happen in the rural aspects. And so we come up with this model where essentially we're looking at bioregions as self-sufficient regenerative communities. And we want it to be family focused. We want to be able to say, hey, how does the family create a level of self-sufficiency that coordinates with their local bioregion, all of their urban farms or rural farms and their urban gardeners? And we realized that the crux of all of this, the kind of centerpiece of self-sufficiency, was the gardener, right? I mean, that's pretty self-explanatory. Where do you think food was before it was in mainstream agriculture 200 years ago, right? Then there's ways to look at permaculture where it's pretty simple to observe the fact that nature has been surviving for eons without any intrusion or management from man. And so if systems exist around us that are totally self-sufficient, and the need for us to have a local focus all exists at the same time, then why don't we create an interwoven network where we have those sustainable systems basically overlaid on our existing community models? And so that's a little bit of an umbrella vision, but TIAG was founded from the concepts of looking at what our family wanted for our own community. And then we turned it into this initiative, this call for action. And then it developed into this international approach where we're basically saying, look, we need to do something, and not just in my own backyard here with my community. It's actually going to happen everywhere. And so we traveled and talked. We went and spread the mission of a self-sufficient communities focused on the support and success of the family as the centerpiece of all of this. From over 27 states, we went up to Canada. We went for 2.5 years full time on the road. And it came down to the conclusion in the end that the best way for us to do this was to network and develop a community of like-minded individuals like yourselves that could teach at a greater scale and a greater capacity. And so we founded the official TIAG community program, which is now where we spread the mission of self-sufficient regenerative communities overlaid over existing communities through the concepts most people are pretty familiar with: food forests in every yard, rain catch on every house you can find, right? A mentor in every home, hive traps in every tree. We have a few foundational pillars we like to see everybody achieve inside the community. That's food, water, shelter, and surplus as the four foundational pillars. But all of that is encompassed into what we call the TIAG community. And so really what TIAG is this huge overarching vision. But the simplest way to explain it is that we are just building self-sufficiency amongst ourselves and with each other. And we are building a place where families can thrive and become free and express themselves in a holistic way. There's really not a whole lot to it more beyond that.
Yeah. Any comments from you, Steve?
Oh, thanks, mate. Yeah, so, you know, Damon, we've been probably connected now for, a year and a half, maybe more, since you and I first chatted, I think on an online free consultation way back when. But, I've been following your family's travels. You know, there's a challenge of traveling with a family, and I congratulate you for just navigating all of that. I once upon a time had a big 45-foot long bus that I had kitted out as a motorhome, and I had my wife and 6 kids in it as we traveled backwards and forwards across the country, just one way up to Idaho and one way back down to Texas after I built a biodiesel plant up in Idaho. And just those two one-way trips made me realize that I don't really want to have, you know, the responsibility for looking after a family on the road for an extended period of time. It's a challenge. So
yeah.
Congrats just on that part of it. And you know, welcome back to a fixed abode, I guess, is all I can say. It must be nice for you after so long on the road, but a great reason for what you're trying to do. And, you know, you're out there, you know, meeting with people in their homes and bringing groups together, spreading the word. So congratulations on all your work in that area.
Thank you. Well, I should clarify too, we're not quite to the fixed abode yet. it's been almost the 5-year mark now. Only 2.5 of that was full-time traveling and teaching. The rest has kind of been, you know, pond hopping here and there. But actually right now we're transitioning between developing the hub and consulting on large projects around the country, trying to get the hub project off the ground, which is just demonstration properties and proof of concepts. So we're not quite there, but we're getting close to the settling down.
Yeah, that's awesome. And just before I comment, I want to give a shout out. We got City Nature YYC joining us. Pedro Pollard. We got Ben Sinderman, one of our designers at Permaculture Canada. Jay Newt and Fazenda Andalizia. Welcome. Thanks for joining us. And so in your comment to, yeah, being on the road, this is something that I'm considering right now too. I'm almost at this empty nester stage, right? I've been raising my kids on my own who are now 21 and almost 18 years old, right? So I'm looking at what's going to happen when my lease runs out next March, 2026. And, you know, I've been looking at vans and I've been thinking about getting the road, you know, maybe getting a C-can to put my stuff in, buying a small piece of land and then just going. And just traveling and, you know, doing the work that I do, I'm fortunate enough to have the freedom to be able to do what I'm doing wherever I am, right? I can really compact down my office into different ways and, you know, the iPad and, you know, hit the road in a van with my drone. And sounds like a dream, right? So maybe it's glorified because I'm in my little Zen house right now and I've got all my instruments and everything like that. So it would be a huge change for me. But I feel like if not now, then when, right?
Yeah.
So I'm inspired by the work of another couple of our designers on our team, Doug and Mel, who are down in Nicaragua, and they ran their project RV for Change. I should actually pop this in the chat in a second about their project that they've already undertook. They could definitely use anybody's support, any sort of funds that you can supply for them. Unfortunately, Doug has had a stroke and they are down in Nicaragua looking for funds to help with those medical bills. So I'm just going to pop that down in the chat.
That's super cool. I actually love the piece of what we've done as far as the family with the traveling aspect of all of this. There's a lot of fun things that we get into when it comes down to the permaculture aspect. And we've got, you go to our website and that you'll see, or this YouTube channel we're broadcasting live on right now too, the Independent American Gardener YouTube channel. You'll see videos and clips and snippets of all these amazing communities that have come together everywhere that our RV has made it, right? In every community that we've stopped. But just as a family, oh man, our life would have been completely profoundly different had we never gotten into that camper. And to this day, I think the only, if I had to do it all over again, the only thing I would have changed is maintaining a hub, a home base. When we started, it was supposed to be phase three of the plan that was travel and teach. We were supposed to get the foundation first, then hit the road. And in the whole mix up, we ended up losing our land at the same time as we closed on one of our homes. And so we ended up with no home base to come back to. And all of our belongings were just in this 4x8 trailer. And we were like, hey, friend, can I park this on your property while we go travel for a few years? great people. One of the designers that we know, Tim Seeley, amazing guy. He's actually from Canada, but moved down here by where we are now here in Missouri. And they were super nice and just let us keep our stuff on the property while we did what we felt like we needed to do. And we hit the road and taught. And my kids, I tell you, you know, out of all the things that we've done, my kids have seen more interaction with people and more incredible destinations around this beautiful continent than I ever did, and, you know, until I took the tour and did it myself with them. I think most people would just ooh and ah at the things my kids have been able to experience. And I, to me as a father, that's a big deal. I got 6 kids now. When we started this, we had 4 kids. And so we actually pulled over a couple different times and rooted down for a month or 2 to 3 months at a time. And we would kind of go through whatever the transition was our family was in before we picked up and kept going. But the mission has always been the why, and it's always been really important that we keep moving forward. And so we never like to stay stagnant. Always like to get back on the road. And it's a totally impacted our family's way of living in a big, big way. It is hard being a permaculturist on the road because you can't be as holistic as you'd like to be. You struggle a little bit with, you know, small living quarters only hold so much stored goods. And so you've got to have a good network of homesteads to be able to kind of hop around from to get good food sources and clean water and things like that. But it's definitely worth it. Wouldn't change it for the world.
So take it. So you've gone out and seen all these properties. Must have taught you a lot about what's required and what people need.
Oh yeah.
So what are the main things that people need and people have been crying out for?
Time. Time right off the bat. You know, we live in a beautiful world where things can be automated now. But there's also a it's kind of a catch-22 because you don't want to detach from the world. You don't want to detach from the soil and just make a machine do everything. And so we've had to try and teach and consult in a way that we're able to say, hey, you know, here's the world's going in 2 different directions. This way over here is all the automation, the technology, the drones, the AI, all these amazing technologies, really phenomenal. And we're blessed to be alive in the day and age that we are. But then there's this other side that's completely abandoning society completely and running off into the middle of the boonies and starting up the teepee tents and just completely leaving it all behind. And then I believe that there's a healthy, happy medium right here where we can integrate a passive chicken door and also catch our rain and also still go play with our chickens, you know, like all these things where you can automate things to give yourself the time. I think permaculture is why I think the lack of time is why you need permaculture in your life. But that's been a big one. We hear it all the time, everywhere we've gone, that common denominator of not having enough time is a really big deal. And so it's important that we stay in that happy medium there and not automate everything so bad that we detach, but not detach so much that we forget we have the ability to free ourselves. My dad is guilty of that. my dad is he's a softie for animals. He's got so many animals and he's always kind of been really involved with the homestead mindset. Ever since time I was born a little 3-acre homestead, but he ties himself down with the livestock and needing to feed them, needing to clean dishes. And, you know, he's working on the automation aspect of all of this, but he's really inundated with work and, just maintaining his livestock. And so he can't really go anywhere, can't really travel. We're here in the Midwest and it's a struggle to get him to come out here and see us, you know? And so I like to give people a glimpse of hope that through permaculture design, you can free your time. You can actually find a level of self-sufficiency where you can still have your livestock, but you can still go. Like, you're not bound. That's, I think, the bottom line of what TIAG is all about. We want to break the chains and free the people.
Awesome.
Yeah, and if you want to go away as well, having that community around you, make sure you build it so somebody can come watch your chickens.
There you go.
And you can watch theirs when they go.
Yep. Then know your babysitter automated, right?
And I'm gonna add, make sure you design it well, right? Like, that's where the design comes in. It's like you got this big broad range picture, you got all these things. But if you're placing your chickens super far away, you know, you're increasing those steps that you're taking. You got to know where your water is and all of that. So when people are thinking about implementing all these, like you're talking about permaculture demonstration sites, I can't really stress how important it is that you want that design. You want that overall look at the whole picture and all the elements that you want to have included before you start plugging those items into your land.
So we did a tour through Tennessee, and coming through Tennessee, we found this really cool like community garden. It was kind of like a park setting, and it wasn't really upkept well. It was just there. But you could tell that it started off with a really cool initiative where they were involving the youth, and it was kind of a classroom for the kids, which was awesome. And we had they had this little gazebo where the rain catch would come off and it'd go through the filtration, and then it ended up in this big tank. And then it would just drain out into the drain. And then right in front of it was like 12 raised beds that were bone dry and everything in it was dead. And so it speaks to the concepts of well design. You're keeping it functional and connected and integrated. And had they just put a little tubing, you know, from that rain tank over to those raised beds, it would have been automated and beautiful and green by the time we got there. But instead, everything was bone dry because somebody didn't have enough time to bring the kids there as often as needed to water all those plants. And so, you know, making sure that things are placed properly and integrated well is really important.
Yeah, to add to that, just the other day, Cormac, myself, and Marjorie Wildcraft were on the Permaculture Vine podcast and chatting about designing yourself into community. So that's one of Cormac's that will come out here shortly. But one aspect of the design that I think we fail to recognize, and I was certainly guilty of, is just the human element of, you know, bringing extra people to help. You know, so Jamin, when you talk about not having enough time, you know, part of that is that, you know, on a homestead, there's just an endless list of tasks. You can never get everything done. There's an endless list of new projects to do. You can never get them done by yourself. And so I've had the fortunate situation this year, literally, you know, lucking into having Julia come and live here and work at my place. And for the part-time work that she puts in, there's a lot more gets done. And it just makes a tremendous difference then on, you know, having a person who A, will help with the tasks, and B, hold me accountable to all the goals that we set, and C, you know, then come up with new and better ways to do things because of her perspective on how to implement permaculture. So I want to encourage people that a part of the design that we often miss, you know, if we're just looking at a design plan for a property, is what time commitments are going to be necessary. And then how many people, how many hours need to be committed to looking after it. And I think if we make that a better part of our design efforts, I think we can start to show people, here's how you'll save time because of permaculture, but here's all of the other things that you may need to consider doing, you know, as projects or further development and improvement. And here's where you're going to need some people to come help.
Absolutely. I think that's a really good point to bring up. You know, people can get really overzealous in their game plan for their homestead and trying to be really intuitive in how they want their envision for their family to look on their homestead. And, you know, you can put in all the different areas of your permaculture design and just blow it out of the water. Really, you can design a property a million different ways, right? And it can just become this resource dump, basically. But at the same time, it's really important that you don't compromise on that vision and that, you know, give yourself permission to go all out and make that dream property. But like you said, design it for the time and the resources that are going into it. And if you're going to create that dream property, well, then do it with the right people, the right job positions, the right influx of networking and marketing and all these other elements that are going to allow you to do that many things and tackle every aspect, because you can only be in one place at a time. So it's really important that we design people in our systems.
Yeah, and I'll add to that too, where it's like, this is where our opportunity is to bring in education to the people that we're designing for. If it's possible, there's never a better time than the design implementation to get them to call on their neighbors and their friends and teach them, and then proliferate the permaculture through their communities through, you know, having somebody come down and provide that education for them, or, you know, some sort of consulting process where they can become a leader for their community in that way.
Definitely.
Yeah. So, Jamin, practical wise, how do people get involved, both professionals who want to teach on your platform and people who want to learn?
Yeah, so there's two ways that we like to look at that, because I actually got myself into a bit of a pickle a few years ago. We started going through the idea of tackling every area of things we wanted to do simultaneously, and we got into a little bit of an overwhelm. And so what we like to do now and what we've learned is that it's important to work with the people that want to work with our vision. And so if you are somebody who's interested in what we do in creating a family-focused, self-sufficient community, then the best way to do that is to take the initiative with us, jump into our community, tiagcommunities.org. And if you're a designer or a professional that somebody wants to network with us, the best way to do that is to jump into our community, tiagcommunities.org. There are a few different tiers. There's free levels. If you're just exploring, you have no idea what we're doing, jump in there, take the Haven initiative, which is basically where you get your feet wet and you explore a little bit about our concepts, and you start to work toward turning your home into a haven. And then there's a few other tiers where if you're all for what we're doing and you want to get fully involved, then jump into the full subscription tier. You get access to everything that we do in our community, and you'll work with me personally. I'll be in there working with you on a regular routine basis. This is where our other permaculture designers will have access to Q&A threads with you. You'll have access to the videos and the reoccurring resources we bring into place. And then if there's just all of that just seems like a little bit too much extra work, you want to get to me directly, the best way to do that is havenpermaculture.com and just have a discovery call.
Great stuff. So I was going to bring us up. So you've mentioned there, Jamin, you have three. No, there's a full podcast in this I would like to do. But you have three brands. Lindsay, you have two. I have two. Graham, you have a couple. What is it with permaculture people and multiple brands?
Redundancy creates resiliency.
Yeah, they all serve a different function, right? You want to do everything under one hat, but you don't think that's sustainable.
Well, I'll start then with my case. You know, so I started Permaculture Adventures Michigan well before I think Permaculture Canada was created, and it was always intended to be my own local design and consulting business for here in Michigan. And now that I'm part of Permaculture Canada, I'm quite happy to bring all the design work into the Permaculture Canada arena and then just use Permaculture Adventures Michigan as my install and nursery business. And so they do serve different purposes. And I'd certainly encourage people that, you know, having multiple different businesses is not a bad thing, you know, if they serve different purposes in different, you know, locations and environments. And so, you know, it becomes pretty easy these days to start another company. I'm sure everybody here, you know, has gone through the process of starting a business in their local area, incorporating it either as a fully incorporated company or as we have here in the United States, LLCs. It's 15 minutes worth of work on the internet and a few hundred dollars typically to do that. So in my lifetime, I've had 15 or 16 of those that have been started up for me or for other people. And so, you know, each of those companies has a purpose. And, you know, the other thing from a legal perspective, it separates liabilities, you know, so the work that I do as an installer doesn't create liability for Permaculture Canada for Lindsay and myself within that arena. So it separates everything nicely from a legal perspective as well.
Yeah, and I have way more businesses, you know, for photography, there's performing. So there's even more than those two. Those are my permaculture businesses, though.
Go ahead.
You go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think it's important to bring that up too, the legal aspect of it, the liability piece. You know, we're not perfect. Permaculture designers are really open-minded and like, you know, permaculture is this overarching hat and this umbrella of all these different niche trades and things we can incorporate. And so we like to dive into all the different areas. For me, I look at, you know, we have three organizations. It's Lulu's Garden, my family's personal business. This is where our e-commerce and retail, that's actually plays the role in TIAG as the barter and trade channel. Then we have Haven Permaculture LLC, which is where we separate, like you, Graham, all of our design work and our collaborations with professionals. And then we have the Independent American Gardener Community Program, which as it stands today is actually just a program, and our transition is we're working into ratifying it as a nonprofit. We're dabbling with the ideas of how to structure it and how to figure it out just right, because ultimately we want to be a registered 501c3 nonprofit. And we're hoping to be able to achieve that this year, but that's the community piece of all this. And that's the vision, that's the philanthropy, right? And so, you know, the other two organizations kind of feed the philanthropy. And so I think it's important to not limit yourself to just one channel, but also protect yourself in the process. Business is an awesome game.
Yeah, so for me, it's Somebody Graham at Edible Installs is a local install, the boots on the ground business. And then the Vine Permaculture is the bigger vision, trying to connect with people and share stories. So guys, that's been great. We've had an hour there. Any final thoughts? Jamin, we'll give you your first go there.
Sure.
You're the guest.
Yeah, so I guess my final thoughts would just be don't look at permaculture and your homestead with a sense of overwhelm, and don't rush it. I just recently spoke with somebody that's an awesome, awesome family. And they took on a really big project of about just under 2,000 fruit trees, and really phenomenal what they're doing and what they're capable of doing. But in the discussion we had with them, I actually consulted with them not to take this big step that they were trying to take. And the reason for that was because it's oftentimes important to withdraw and reevaluate, especially when we open ourselves up to something new and we've never done before. It's really important to get the design done before you build it. Make sure that you're taking the steps to be thought out. But word of caution with that, don't get into the analysis paralysis. It's oftentimes also equally as important to do it, and you'll learn in the process how it's done. Don't get stuck never putting a shovel in the ground.
I just want to give a shout out to Regen Week. We're going to be there in March down in Austin, Texas. So keep your eyes on the socials for that event that's coming up. Not sure if we'll do the March before or after that event, so I just thought I'd mention it now.
And I'm actually going to be off to Florida on Tuesday for a period of 8 to 10 days, mixture of business and pleasure, catching up with my best friend in the whole world who I haven't seen for a couple of years, and visiting a number of customers and looking for new opportunities in that part of the world. So I also just wanted to say thank you for all of the people who joined on my Instagram channel. A record number of folks, I think, have joined us this month. So thanks, everybody who's been here today. It's been fun.
Yeah, again, I'll second that. Thanks, everybody else. Thanks for viewing on all the different channels. I really appreciate it. I really appreciate my three guests this evening. Thanks very much. And anybody wants to get in contact with anybody, just reach out. And if you have any ideas for any future shows or any guests, just send me an email, cormac@finepermaculture.com. Just reach out. Let me know how you're getting on, any questions, any future shows, anything really, and I'll get back to you. Cool. Guys, thanks very much. And for the audience, we'll see you all next week. And again, thank you. I have a few comments here. You're awesome. I don't know who that's. And then yeah. Jamie comments again. Thanks, guys.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Thank you.
Thanks, everybody. Cheers.